Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lum, and on today's show, we have Frank Oro, vocalist, musician, author of Hawaii to CBGB, and lead man for Poi Dog Pondering. Hey, Frank, welcome to Bite Marks Cafe.
Hey, Bert. Thanks so much, brother. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, you know, we're gonna give you a chance to give us a little bit about the history. And, you know, I'm actually very thrilled to have you on because very few times do I get to have people that we actually share a history that goes back probably a good, like, 40 yeah. years.
Yeah, true.
So, anyway, so let's start with a little bit of that. So, I know you, Frank, because when I came back from college, I was all into, like, the alternative music scene and, you know, going to clubs like, you know, Anna Miller's and Anna Bananas and catching, you know, catching bands at the time. And people, I'm hoping my listeners are kind of like savvy to this, but, you know, Pagan Babies and, you know, Hat Makes the Man. But tell us a little bit about that early history of your kind of role in the music scene here.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there's layers and layers to the music scene here. You know, like, and you know, eras. But for me, you know, in late 70s, I had just happened to meet Kit Ebersbach. By chance, I was busboying in a restaurant out in Hawaii Kai, where I grew up, and I sat in with the band. He asked me to play drums for a band that he was starting. He wanted to do some punk and new wave stuff. And I was into that, and I was collecting those records, so I was into it. There was no place to play at the time, but we just started rehearsing. And then kind of simultaneously at that time, that scene was building. You know, I mean, there was these two guys, Kim and Kale. They opened up this club called 3D. Mm-hmm. That was like no liquor license, BYOB, punk rock club, you know, worked there. And then Jack Law opened up The Wave. Mm-hmm. You know, you used to have Hula's, which is the best gay club in town. He opened up The Wave, which, you know, it was a late night gay club, had a 4 o'clock license, but everyone was over at Hula's because it was a better bar. So he wanted to try to get somebody in the bar from 9 till 2. So he went to the 3D and asked the punk rock, you know, bands if they would come play over there. And so there was a little punk rock scene at The Wave from 9 to 2. And then, you know, the gay crowd would come over. But anyways, like, that was like this beginning of this wave in Hawaii for that punk, new wave, and then on to post-punk scene that went on. And, you know, I would feel lucky to have been there at the whole cusp of the whole thing, you know. And you know, and because of that, I got to play with all the original emerging bands like Squids, and, you know, I was an original member with that, and also the Hat Makes the Man, and then Pagan Babies, which is a very important global music band, and then Mumbo Jumbo, a great ska, you know, band. And I feel like our scene in Hawaii at that time was particularly vibrant. I mean, we had this small scene that was like, you know, you have the University of Hawaii leading out into town, you know, from Wailea to Chinatown. And there was it just became like this little hotbed of like everyone kind of doing things on a really, you know, micro level, but very creative, you know. And I feel we were lucky. I think we had, my main point that I want to say about that is that there's something that happens when you're in the middle of the Pacific in a international city, as far as it's international Pacific city, like we are the hub, you know. And then but we're paying attention to all the stuff that's happening in like London and Glasgow and, you know, Paris and stuff like that. And then we're making stuff based on our imagination of what's going on in New York or San Francisco or Los Angeles or London and stuff like that. And we're kind of dreaming with that thing, but doing it in this beautiful nest. Mm-hmm. I feel like we were really lucky. I, as much as I wanted to be in London in those days, I feel very fortunate that I was in Honolulu because the creative mind is sometimes is better than the thing itself. Like when you're thinking about what something is out there in the world, like, oh my God, it's so vibrant what they're doing there. But you're now thinking creatively about it and you're dreaming hard. And I think we're lucky that way.
Oh, yeah. And I definitely recall those times. And, you know, I had come back from doing my master's degree in 81. So when I came back, I was really, and this was in the Bay Area. So, you know, the punk scene was still pretty vibrant there. And, you know, there were bands like the Dead Kennedys and things. And, you know, coming back to Hawaii, you know, I had this urge to, you know, do something to help elevate the voice, you know, of that that whole scene. So a buddy of mine, you know, Gary Chun and I, we kind of started a fanzine way back then called Novus. And it was just, you're absolutely right. It was a vibrant thing. But the thing that I will say, though, is that as vibrant as it was and such great creativity was exhibited, it was relatively short-lived, yeah? I mean, it kind of lasted maybe 5-6 years, and then the scene changed. But I do want to kind of chronicle your sort of journey through that, because as you mentioned, you know, you had played with a number of notable bands, and at some point in time, you know, you decided, okay, I'm, you know, I got my own sound, I got my own thing that I want to share, and that basically kind of created Poi Dog Pondering. But this is probably well into, you know, 83, 84 time frame, right?
Exactly. Yeah, 84. I started making these little homemade cassette albums, because like the, you know, thing in Hawaii, especially at the time, is that we would fly to Los Angeles and try to do showcase gigs to try to get a record contract. But it was like we'd spend $5,000 to fly over there, pay for hotels, you know, go do the thing. So all of a sudden I realized that's not going to happen, you know? So the thing was like, yeah, just make your own records, you know? So it was just making my own homemade cassette albums and selling them on consignment in Jellies or Records Hawaii or stuff like that. And then, and you guys with Novus, you guys were the first people to review my cassette albums. I was so stoked, you know, because I was selling like maybe like 8, you know, at the record store. And that's because my sister worked there and she was pushing them, you know? But you guys, you know, reviewed it. And then there was, you know, when I go back to visit my brother in LA, and then there's a record store there called Texas Records, and they would take my record on consignment there. And, they ended up expressing interest in recording me, like they said, we're going to start a label. We'd like to record you. So that went in my head. And then, you know, I left on a trip with the original, so the homemade records were the most important thing, and they were done on 4-track, cassette 4-track. And this is like an, you know, interesting arc that I'd love to talk about in light of the tech aspect of your show, you know, because it's oddly kind of full circle. Like I went from sitting in my bedroom with a 4-track cassette player and one microphone and multi-tracking these, you know, records, these songs, and then making cassette albums, to then going on and going through the whole indie label. And then I got signed to CBS Columbia, major label stuff. And then I started my own label. And now I'm back. I'm literally right now, I'm in front of my computer with my 2 speakers, and I make my albums again now on my computer. It's like the new 4-track, but it's way better.
Well,
the audio quality is like unbelievable.
Yeah. And I do want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about that. The influence of tech on your music, because, you know, I don't know, maybe a lot of our listeners, I mean, they don't even know what a cassette player is nowadays, and everything is pretty much done on the computer. Now, I want to kind of hold that thought. We'll be right back to continue our conversation with Frank Orrell. He's a vocalist, musician, author of Hawaii to CBGB, and of course, the lead man for Poi Dog Pondering. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training, and the Rice Partnership.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. I'm Bert Lum. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Frank Orrell. He's a vocalist, musician, author of Hawaii to CBGB, lead man for Poi Dog Pondering. And of course, right before the break, you know, I do want, Frank, for you to tell a little bit about the street musician part of you, because before this whole exodus, you know, to LA and, you know, what you have now done on the mainland. And I do want to give you a chance to kind of like recollect how tech started to kind of influence your production. But you spent a lot of time on the street at Waikiki, right?
Yeah. So kind of like the thing for me there was like with Squibs and Hat Makes a Man, we both made records and tried to like cross over to the continent, you know, but we just couldn't make it happen, you know? And I kind of felt, I didn't have a good feeling inside trying to chase, you know, record labels and doing all that. So it just didn't make me feel good. You know, I kind of feel like waiting at the back door for scraps, you know? So I was you know, let's just go play on the street, you know, let's go sell cassettes out of the guitar case. And so we used to play, on Kalakaua in Waikiki. It became like a kind of thing where all of the kind of, you know, indie bands, they would all come down there and it would be kind of like an acoustic. Everybody would just, everyone was doing it for fun. There weren't many places to play in Hawaii for that music then. So like we were just playing it acoustically on the street, you know, doing, you know, so anyways, it became so much fun that we thought, wow, we should do this across the continent and just use it to make gas money so we can have an adventure across the states.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exactly what we did. We sold our belongings, you know, anything that we had, you know, put stuff in storage. We flew to California and bought like a big GMC Suburban, which is, you know, back in those days, like a farm truck. These days it's like pretty nice, you know, vehicle, but it was great for us. And we spent a year driving all over North America, like up into Canada, down to border towns, Mexico, across through the South, and then all the way to New York. We were sleeping outdoors a lot because we were broke, but we were, you know, we made enough money to like put gas in the tank and buy burritos and exist and have a nice adventure, you know. And luckily, I met this guy, a French guy, who was on vacation in Honolulu, but we became very good friends, and he joined us for the trip, and he's a photographer, so he took excellent pictures. So that was one of the big key points for me wanting to do this book, because really I started out wanting to do a book about the road trip, because it's rich with stories. But as soon as I started writing, it was like, I gotta back up, and you know, then all of a sudden it was like, I gotta talk about like Hawaii and how my parents got to Hawaii and how I don't spend a lot of time on personal history, but just enough of the key points, you know, because my father was an astronomer. He moved out to Hawaii to take, because it's good observing there in a way that he took an adventure to go to Hawaii, took all of us on that adventure. And then Hawaii has so much nature that entered into the music. And then the Hawaii music scene was so important, taught me the DIY. Kit, really, from the Squibs is key for that.
Uh-huh.
He taught me the DIY thing of making your own records. And then the Hawaii music scene was so important. Craig Okino from the Pagan Babies, you know, and Lloyd Cadell were like mentors to me.
Uh-huh.
So these guys, you know, so I had to write about that scene. And as soon as I'm writing about that scene, then it's like, I got to write about the Honolulu music scene because I cherish it, you know. So anyways, the book is kind of like, it talks about the Hawaii music scene. But then it spends a lot of time on this road trip, which was the formation of Hoi Dog Pondering, really.
Mm-hmm.
One was me making the home cassettes, but us doing this, having this adventure was like key thing. And then at the end of that trip, we kind of all went our separate ways, but I got picked up and signed by this indie record label called Texas Hotel out of Los Angeles. And I went to Austin and recorded the first record there because I met good musicians on the road there, and I knew I could get the job done there. And then on the strength of that, I got signed to Columbia, CBS, Sony after that, and did two records for them.
What was it like? What was it like, you know, going from kind of an indie record environment to a corporate Columbia kind of record label?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is that the label that I got signed to was like really, really good creative people. Like they're very good friends with Michael Stipe, best mm-hmm. friends really with Michael Stipe. The people on the label were Vic Chestnut, who's a brilliant songwriter. Henry Rollins, like a punk guy out of Los Angeles, Downey Mildew, and Poi Dog, like very eclectic label. And they were a hot indie at the time. It felt like I was in a clubhouse with people who really cared. They defended me against kind of the music business world, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, like it just, the interest, there was a point where there were six major labels that wanted to sign Poi Dog. There was like a bidding war. It got out of hand. It was like one of these things where it was I think what I said to somebody one time is like, I never wanted to leave Texas Hotel, but there's some ways like after a while, lawyers and managers just start, they make sense. You know, they're like, look, you can afford to take the band on tour. You can do this if you. So we ended up signing with the major, but I did a co-deal. So Texas Hotel was still with us. It was like back in those days, you could negotiate co-deals where you had your indie label. They had their imprint pressed on the record along with the major label. And I still had them as counsel and they were down for that. So we did that for a little while. And then, but what was hard about being on the, what's great about being on the major is that we had a budget to do stuff. Like we went to record at Prince's studio, Paisley Park. You know, we recorded in London and New York. We recorded in Memphis with the Memphis Horns. We had a budget to run. The downside was that all of a sudden there was 20 people who had an opinion about what the artwork should
yeah,
be,
right.
What producer we should work with. You know, where we should tour, you know, like when we'd shoot videos, I would hire somebody to do the video a director that I wanted, but they would send a person from the label down there to tell the director what to do. And I would be like, no. I just made two records with them and then got off and then have started my own label called Plate Tectonic Records and have been recording on that ever since. That was back in 92 that I made that move.
And then, and kind of the, you know, the tech sort of thread is that mm-hmm. tech actually enabled you to do this on your own.
Yes. I think, you know, and to kind of quickly run through the tech thread for me, because it's all based on recording, because that's what I do, you know, and the computer now is like my best friend for recording. I love it, you know,
mm-hmm.
Early days would be the 4-track recorder and then when I finally had a little bit of budget with the indie label, we went into a proper studio in Austin that had, you know, 2-inch analog tape, very high quality analog tape. And normally their process would be you record on 2-inch analog tape, which gives you 24 tracks, and then you mix it down to 2 tracks, which mm-hmm. means left and right stereo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you would go right to another, you know, 1/4-inch tape. But one of the things that our engineer suggested that we do, this is in 88.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very new technology for the time. He said, let's run it through a beta cassette machine. We don't even record to it, but we just run it over the beta heads. And then we send it to the 1/4-inch tape. And he said, I think it's going to do something to the stereo field. And, we all A-B'd it, and we A-B'd it with the band, not even knowing which was which, and everybody picked the one that ran through the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so back in those days, you call it AAA, which is analog, analog, analog. Mm-hmm. Meaning like you recorded on analog, you mastered it to analog, you know, you released it on analog, which is vinyl. Then it becomes DDA, which is digital. DAA, digital analog, which is the 1/4-inch tape, and then the vinyl record. But then this, you went into a digital step. So it was like, sorry, I'm using the wrong things, but it's like analog. I'll step out of that and I'll say more clearly that we had it on analog 2-track tape. We ran it through a digital machine, then back to analog tape, and it wound up on a vinyl record. But it went through a digital step before there was even digital recording. And it added this stereo spectrum spread that wasn't on the analog tape, which we found super fascinating. And we used that for the next two records and the next three records. And then eventually things went, for the fourth record, everything went digital, but it was VHS tapes, you know. Yeah. So we recorded onto 8-track VHS, and we used to slave them together so we could have, like, you know, 6 VHS tapes going, so we had multi-tracks, you know. And then we mixed it down to DAT, digital audio tape. So it was all digital then. But then the next step that was the computer and digital performer, all these different DAWs, like Digital Performer or Pro Tools or things like that, the digital audio workstation.
Well, it's amazing how
that's,
you know,
where we are now.
Yeah, as a musician, I mean, you gotta really kind of keep up with all this technology that enables your music to get produced. Now, I do want to give you a chance to talk about the book, because, you know, that is something that's kind of newly released, and it's actually the first of 3 books. So let's hold that thought. We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with Frank Oro, vocalist, musician, author of Hawaii to CBGB, and lead man for Poi Dog Pondering. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, whose contributors help Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Anchor Systems Hawaii.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Frank Oro, vocalist, musician, author of Hawaii to CBGB, and lead man for Poi Dog Pondering. And right before the break, we're talking about some of the tech that has influenced the production of music, your music, Frank. But you're a writer and compelled to tell the story. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. Are we at the age now where we got to put our stories to to paper and pen? So, you know, and obviously the reason why is because you got a lot of good stories to tell. Now, this first one, Hawaii to CBGB. I mean, what are you chronicling? You primarily your road trip, right?
Yeah, I was intending to write one book, and mm-hmm. it became so mammoth. You know, it was just like it started becoming, because there's so many eras of the band. Basically, there's coming up in Hawaii, there's the road trip, settling in Austin, Texas to record the first vinyl record. But I only stayed in Austin for like 3-4 years. Then mm-hmm. I moved to Chicago and was in Chicago for 29 years.
Wow.
And,
wow.
Yeah. When I was in Austin, those 4 years were dense with major label stuff, major label recording, major label producers, you know, like, and intense touring, like, you know, mm-hmm. Back and forth across the country, Europe, Japan and stuff. So there's a lot of stories there. And then when I moved to Chicago, we started on a record label in Chicago. We actually became the biggest, I mean, we got the most, we in popularity kind of grew the strongest there. And, you know, we made a lot of records there. So so all of a sudden I realized I have to divide this up into 3 books, you mm-hmm. know, and because we lived in 3 different cities, Honolulu, Austin, and Chicago, and had distinctly different lives, even different lineups. Mm-hmm. So I felt like this first book needed to be like Hawaii. And then the reason why CBGB's is that we landed in Austin, made the first vinyl record, and then we drove to New York to play CBGB's for the winter. Was some music conference that was not the winter music conference, but I forget the name of it right now. But that's where, like, all of our we got all this record label interest made from the majors, and things were about to change. So I broke the book there. That's the ending of book one. And then the next one of the reasons why I started writing this book is that it's coming up on the 40th year anniversary of Poi Dog. So mm-hmm. I kind of feel like, you know, and I decided that now was the time. There's not really any more reason than that for it, you know? And, but I had this great photographer to work with for the first book. I have another great photographer that I met in Austin that I'm going to work with for that book. And then another great photographer in Chicago. And so basically the Austin years is kind of like, it's like adventures in studio and recording and touring, and also surviving the buzz and the buzzards of the major label bidding uh-huh. war that we found ourselves in.
Yeah.
And I have a lot to talk with, you know, about that there. And then the Chicago years, like kind of building our own self-sufficient creative engine with our own label. And, you know, and, and, and also surviving the digital age. I mean, you can't tell you how huge that was, like before when, you know, like all of a sudden when as soon as Napster happened, mm-hmm. it was like a free fall in the amount of record sales. It was almost like a parachute, you know, person jumping out of a plane. We ended up having to like drive CDs to the dump because we just couldn't sell them, you know, because everything went there, like over the years, so you're talking about like an income, like, and those formats like Spotify and iTunes, they don't pay anything right. close to like proper thing. So it's not even possible really. So I'm going to talk about that too, like not in a salty way, because it's just the way it is, you know,
yeah.
But it's like an interesting thing. I have, because I've ran my own record label for 25 years, I know that stuff, you know?
Hey, Frank, you know, there's probably a ton that we could talk about. And I do want to give you a chance to say that you're coming to Hawaii sometime soon, like maybe next month. You plan to do any kind of book signing?
I'm hoping so. I've reached out to a couple of people, like at the store and a couple of other places. And I'm hoping to hear back. And I'm going to be in Honolulu in mid-November. A little bit, so I'm going to set up something. I just haven't found it yet.
Well, just let us know, and we'll definitely get the word out, and
you
know, we can get the book signing going. And in the meantime, you know, if people want to find out what's happening with you and Poi Dog, and especially your adventures with thievery. You know, where can they find that?
I'm a percussionist vocalist with Thievery Corporation. Also, I've been doing that since 2000. And that one, you can all their stuff is on their website. The best place, definitely, for both Thievery and for Poi Dog is the website. So thieverycorporation.com. And then also with Poi Dog is poidogpondering.com. And all of the information about touring and releases, musical releases and book releases and stuff is there.
Well, I'll put that up on our show notes. Frank Oro is vocalist, musician, author of Hawaii to CBGB. Book 1 of 3, and of course, the lead man for Poi Dog Pondering. I want to thank you, Frank, for joining me today. And of course, thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk about computer science in K-12 education. If you've missed any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. Our engineer is David Chong. You can catch us on HBR One every Friday or anytime via the HBR app or your favorite podcast application. In the meantime, you stay safe, you stay awesome. And we'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe. We're ending now with one of my favorite songs from Poi Dog Pondering. This is All Around the World from their album, Remnants of Summer. Enjoy. All around the world, the sun is rising 24 hours a day. Are drifting, lava flowing into sea. Chile and Peru are growing higher every day. Workers in the factories.